a production of South Dakota Public Broadcasting.
House Committee on Transportation will please come to order.
That again. The House Committee on Transportation will please come to order. Every time I push this button, I think everything's on. It's not. Want to greet everyone who is here in the gallery to listen to us, and also all those on the internet. Remind everyone to make sure your cell phones are either completely off or on buzz or silent, however yours works. Certainly appreciate that. I'd also like to have our... She's busy right now. I'll wait. Have our page come and introduce. Today is your last day, right?
It is.
Well, did you enjoy your stay?
It was very fun.
Super.
I'm Carissa Buckles, and I'm from Pierce, South Dakota.
Thank you. Thanks for all the work you've done for us. We appreciate it. Here, man. Oh. We'll have the secretary call the roll, please.
Representatives Feigert.
Here.
Ring.
Here.
Shrimp.
Here.
Russell.
Here.
Steele.
Here.
Kaiser. Qualm.
Here.
Rasmussen.
Here.
Stalzer.
Here.
Shanefish.
Here.
Duvall. Hickey.
Here.
And Vershiel.
Here.
We have a quorum.
Thank you. I'd entertain a motion for approval of the minutes, please.
So moved.
Moved by, was it Qualm? Okay, by Representative Qualm, seconded by Representative Hickey. All those in favor will say aye.
Aye.
All those opposed, same sign. Minutes are approved. Thank you. Just a quick reminder, if you're going to testify, please sign in back at the podium there. Usually the only ones that forget that are members of the House or Senate, so almost everybody else is under control when it comes to that. If you have any handouts, you can go ahead and get them to our page. You just introduced yourself, and she will distribute them to the committee. Questions should be directed through me. That way we won't get into any unnecessary back and forth that might disrupt a few things. So we'll go ahead and get started here. And I'm going to change up the order here. We have lots of people testifying on bills today. So we're going to move 1197 to the top. And 1155 to the bottom. Everybody got that straightened out here now? Okay, and the first bill we're going to address today is House Bill 1197, provide for the historical motor vehicle license plates and special personalized historical vehicle license plates for certain motor vehicles, sponsored by Representative Feinstein. And are there any proponents for House Bill 1197? Oh, well, you're already there.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Welcome, Representative.
Thank you. I'm Mark Feinstein, State Representative from District 14 in the southeast corner of Sioux Falls. I come to you with Bill 1197 today as its biggest proponent, and I'm also the biggest opponent. And I ask you this time to please move it to the 41st day, and we'll hear it another time. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative. Representative Duvall.
Mr. Chairman, based on that compelling testimony, I move 41st legislative day.
Thank you. Seconded by Representative Steele. Moved by Duvall, seconded by Steele. This will be, I assume you're going to waive rebuttal. This will be final action then on House Bill 1197. The Secretary will call the roll. Those in favor of the motion to the 41st day will vote aye. Those opposed, nay.
Representatives Feigert.
Aye.
Ring.
Aye.
Shrimp.
Aye.
Russell.
Aye.
Steele.
Aye.
Kaiser.
Aye.
Calm.
Aye.
Rasmussen.
Aye.
Stalzer.
Aye.
Shane Fish.
Aye.
Duvall.
Aye.
Hickey.
Aye.
And Verschio.
Aye.
We had 13 yeas.
Thank you, Representative. So on a vote of 13-0, House Bill 1197 will be referred to the 41st day. Thank you. Our next order of business then will be House Bill 1141, an act to revise certain provisions regarding certain motor vehicle dealer license plates and permits. And that is sponsored by Representative Peterson. Are there any proponents to House Bill 1141?
Mr. Chairman.
Thank you, Representative. Welcome.
Well, welcome. It's good to be back in House Transportation. My first two terms in the legislature in 2001, I served on House Transportation, and I appreciate all the work that you do. And I hope that you don't dispose of this bill as quickly as you did the last bill. But you might wonder how a farm boy from eastern South Dakota is before you bringing a license plate bill. But I have to confess, my oldest son is a Ford Chrysler dealer at Belle Fourche, and my second son is a truck dealer in Watertown, South Dakota, right by the town clock. And that's why I'm here. And I'm sure that most of the committee members are quite aware of the 77 metal plates that auto dealers have had for decades. You see them driving around on new cars. And in 2004, the legislature did authorize the use of an 88 plate, a commercial plate, for vehicles up to 26,000 pounds that our truck dealers could use. And now we're asking for an update of that, because when a customer comes in and wants to buy a $150,000 semi, he would like to know if it can pull the load that he wants to pull. And we have no way of legally doing that right now. Here we could do this metal plate, and they pay the commercial rate, and they could put this ton tags on this 88 plate and go up to whatever ton they want to pay. This is going to be, it's going to generate more revenue for the state of South Dakota, and so it's going to be good. And at this time, then, I'm going to call on Myron Rao to go through the details of the bill, and I'll stand by for questions. And I hope that you can support the bill, because it's a consumer-friendly bill. It's good for the consumer. It's good for the state. It's good for our dealers, who generate a lot of business in this state.
Thank you, Representative. Are there any other proponents?
Good morning, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. Cool morning to get together, but we're in here where it's warm. I am Myron Rao, the president and registered lobbyist for the South Dakota Automobile Dealers Association. I want to thank Representative Peterson for bringing this bill for your consideration. As he indicated, for decades we have had 77 plates for dealerships. What that plate was created for is because everything on the lot is for sale. You can move it from vehicle to vehicle to vehicle. So the plate is actually registered to the dealership, not to the vehicle. Again, as indicated by Representative Peterson, in 2004 we came to create this 88 plate, again with the blessing of DMV, because we had nothing that we could do commercially. And what had changed in the industry is, if Representative Verschio wanted a particular model, a particular color, and his local dealer didn't have it, and that one might have been sitting on a lot in Denver or in somewhere in Wyoming, he didn't want a salesperson driving his new car to that lot. So dealers started hauling them. That's why we needed a commercial plate. So now you couldn't do that 77, and there was a way you could do it, but it was kind of a hassle. You'd put a 77 plate on, and then you'd buy a trip permit, which could be done, but it was a hassle to do it. So again, with the concurrence of DMV, we went through that in 2004. We put a cap on it of 13 ton at that time, because anybody that's knows anything about the trucking business, and as you know, I also represent the Trucking Association. When you leave the state at over 26,000 pounds, when you start crossing state lines, you become a trucker. You got a lot of new regulations. And so we capped it at 13 ton with that intent. Then you don't have to worry about fuel permits and a lot of other things that are that come into play. But what I forgot, and I've had to apologize to the heavy truck dealers because they're part of the Auto Dealers Association, we forgot them in 2004 when we did this. As indicated by Representative Peterson, we've got people today that are walking into a tractor dealership and about to pay $140,000 to $160,000 for a tractor that they have no idea if it's going to pull that trailer the way it's configured or doubles or whatever it may be. This now will allow us to put whatever tonnage sticker we can or want or are willing to pay for. And I'm just going to use an 80,000-pound plate is about $1,700. That's for a commercial trucker. That's for Representative Fikert. Whatever he licenses his truck for, we're paying that same fee. All we end up with the 88 plate is we don't register it to the vehicle, just like the 77. We register it to the dealership so that it can be moved. Again, when I drafted this, to do my due diligence, I approached the Highway Patrol and also DMV about this. And so their language is in here. And I'm going to refer to this bill, and I might have to eat those words, as a hug fest. I believe we're going to have supporting testimony. But I'd like to walk through the bill with you just for a second so you understand why it's so long and their language. Again, all we added was by a prospective buyer. So and I tied that back to the law. So what you see underlined in 7, 8, and 9, lines 7, 8, and 9, is a prospective buyer for demonstration purposes only, and that's 3 days. So if you look at back 32.6B25, that's where it talks about the demonstration plate, which is the blue plate you see on used cars that we use for demonstrate used or new cars. That's a 3-day limit. And we want to follow the same 3-day limit. And then we say the actual gross weight can't exceed the licensed gross weight, you know, where it used to say 13 ton, and that's lines 12 and 13. And then the following page, the Highway Patrol wanted a way to be able to audit this and to be able to check if we're cheating. And so we've agreed to put a log in the dealership so that we write down that Representative Hickey took it on such and such a date and brought it back on such and such a date, also identifying the vehicle so that it can then be shown that we didn't use this for 3 weeks and so on and so forth. And then the rest of the section, section 2, 3, and 4, we're repealing the old master demonstration compensation permit, which was the system before, and I believe Deb Hilmer is going to talk about how many of those were used. It was used very infrequently, again, because it was kind of a hassle. This is going to be very simple. I don't know, and I wouldn't want to be held to the number, but I believe we're going to sell, according to the dealers that are members, 10 of these plates right as soon as it's legal. That's $17,000. And again, Deb's going to have to verify this, but I think she's going to tell you we used 5 of those master demo comp permits last year, and they're $15 a piece. So this is really a good thing for the state. Again, when Representative Fikert or any other person registers a commercial truck, they're going to try to use it every day that they can to make money with that unit. These guys are probably going to run these half a dozen, three-quarters of a dozen times in a year. So the use to the road will not at all represent what they're willing to pay. But the dealers are willing to pay that fee for the privilege to allow their prospective buyers to demonstrate that unit. And it is good for used truck dealers as well as new truck dealers. That's all I've got. I thank you for your time. The membership of the association is about 160 franchise dealers, and we'd appreciate your support. And I will stand by for questions.
Thank you, Mr. Rao. Any other proponents for House Bill 1141? Welcome, Ms. Hilmer.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. Deb Hilmer, Director of the Division of Motor Vehicles. And we did have an opportunity to work with the industry on this particular issue, and we do stand in support of it. During 2012, we only sold 11 of the what we call master demonstration permits at the rate of $50. We do see this as probably a revenue generator. We'll probably see more of these dealers buying these 88 plates for the purposes of being able to use them for prospective buyers than we've had in the past. So we do think it's going to be a benefit to us. The other thing we had the opportunity to do, when Myron brought this to us and we started looking at it and went back and started looking at our master demonstration permit process, we were able to repeal those sections of the law. And that's always a good feeling when you can get rid of a requirement that you have in the law on somebody that is no longer useful. So we do stand in support of 1141 and did work with law enforcement from the Highway Patrol and also with the industry to come up with a workable solution for the motor carriers. So thank you.
Thank you, Deb. Are there any further proponents for House Bill 1141?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. My name is Lindsay Ryder-Rapp, and I'm a registered lobbyist for the South Dakota Association of Independent Auto Dealers. And we, too, rise in support of the legislation here today. As Mr. Rao indicated, used car dealers certainly would have the opportunity and do sell trucks as well. So we certainly appreciate the efforts to allow them and their prospective customers an opportunity to test these trucks before they might purchase them. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you, Lindsay. Any further proponents for House Bill 1141? Further proponents? Are there any opponents to House Bill 1141? Any opponents? It's going once, twice, third time. Any opponents? And seeing none, then we'll move on to committee questions. Thank you. Seeing none, let's move on to committee discussion and or action.
Mr. Leader, Mr. Chair, Chairman, got to be a leader again.
Representative Steele.
I'd like to do pass.
Thank you. Moved do pass by Representative Steele, seconded by Representative Hickey. Discussion?
It just appears that something like this will be a win-win-win situation for all around. The dealers would like it. The state's going to make some money on it. Always like that. And the person who wants, potential buyers, are going to be able to get a better feel for the if that's a truck they want. So I think it's just a good program all the way around. Thank you.
Thank you. Any other comment? Okay, then we will take action on the do pass motion for the bill, House Bill 1141. Secretary will call the roll. Those in favor will say aye. Those opposed, same sign. Thank you.
Representative Feigert.
Aye.
Ring.
Aye.
Shrimp.
Aye.
Russell.
Aye.
Steele.
Aye.
Kaiser.
Aye.
Quam.
Aye.
Rasmussen.
Aye.
Stalzer.
Aye.
Shanefish.
Aye.
Duvall.
Aye.
Hickey.
Aye.
And Vershio.
Aye.
There are 13 yeas.
There are 313 yeas? Oh, 13. Okay, good. Boy, it confused me there for a second. Having received 13 affirmative votes, House Bill 1141 will proceed to the floor. Representative Hickey moved consent. Oh, it does? Oh, because it's a fee. Yep. Sorry, we can't go to consent because it would be a two-thirds vote on the floor. Thanks for saving me there, Dave. Okay, and next up, I got so many lines on here because thank you, sir. Is House Bill 1174 revised certain provisions pertaining to snowmobile operation, and I've got to tell you, this is the most interesting bill that I've ever read, and thank goodness we got some pictures of what the, because I had no idea what this thing even looked like. So we'll proceed with proponent testimony. Thank you.
Good morning, Mr. Leader. Mr. Chairman.
Thank you.
Committee, it's nice to be back in my old alma mater. I, too, served my first term in transportation. And I see, Mr. Chairman, that that cold, brisk wind we had this morning froze your hair like it did mine.
Yes, it did.
1174 is an interesting bill. It's an act to revise certain provisions pertaining to snowmobile operation. And I got a call on this particular bill from an individual who wanted to ride a motorcycle on a snowmobile trail, and I couldn't envision how you could do that. And he said, well, I make kits that will allow the motorcycle to go on a snowmobile trail. And, of course, one of the problems is right now in statute, you cannot ride a motorcycle or an ATV legally on a snowmobile trail. And so we have to revise the statute a little bit to make this available for people that have these kits. And the first part of the bill basically deals with what a roadway is and et cetera, the width and so on. And the nuts and bolts of the bill actually is in starting on line 10 in section 2, and it says, any resident owner who has titled a motorcycle or all-terrain vehicle which has been modified to comply with the definition of a snowmobile for use as a snowmobile on a state snowmobile trail or area established pursuant to the provisions of Chapter 41-19 may purchase a snowmobile trail user pass for a fee of $20, which is the same for a snowmobiler. The Department of Game, Fish, and Parks shall collect the annual fee imposed by this section and shall deposit the fees in the Snowmobile Trails Fund established by 32-5-9.2. And so with that, I will stand by for questioning, for questions, interrogations, whatever. I do believe there is an amendment coming which would be a friendly amendment. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Kopp. Any further proponents for House Bill 1174?
Good morning, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. It's also old home week for me because I served my first term in the legislature on House Transportation, so we've got a hat trick here today.
The only thing you forgot to do, Mr. Sutton, is
introduce myself. I'm sorry, I'm Dwayne Sutton from Aberdeen, and I am here today as a registered lobbyist of the South Dakota Snowmobile Association to speak to House Bill 1174. And as was mentioned, we do have an amendment, so if I may speak to the bill and to the amendment.
Certainly.
Okay. The way the bill is drafted, we as organized snowmobilers are in opposition to the bill because it does a few things that we're not comfortable with as far as allowing all-terrain vehicles and so on onto the trail. And it just needs a little tweaking, and hence the amendment. Basically, the amendment would eliminate the word wheels on page 2, line 3, how the word and why the word wheels was originally in the original legislation and law, we don't know, but this is our opportunity to remove it. And we're also removing the word all-terrain vehicles because I also serve as the vice president of the American Council of Snowmobile Associations. So across the snow belt, this is an issue that we're dealing with and trying to define a way for the all-terrain vehicles to safely travel on the groom snowmobile trails, but we're not there yet. There's a lot of concern from a safety standpoint because of the width, and this bill does address the width. It inserts the maximum of 48-inch width, and a lot of the snowmobile trails are groomed to an 8-foot width, so that's why we're trying to keep it so two vehicles, two snowmobiles can safely meet each other on the trail, and some of the larger all-terrain vehicles are considerably wider than that. So we're taking care of that through the amendment. What we're doing is we're establishing an annual permit that will run from December 1st through March 31st, which would coincide with the snowmobile trail grooming season. It starts East River on December 1st. It starts West River in the Black Hills region on December 15th and goes through March 31st or whenever it stops snowing. But the end date is March 31st. That's when grooming ceases. So another thing the amendment does is requires them to affix the permit to the right-hand side of the motorcycle so that it's clearly visible to law enforcement so that we can verify that they have paid the permit fee. And the permit fee will be established at $20, and it will be available through Game Fish and Parks and snowmobile trails offices in the Black Hills. As far as we know right now, there's only one of these vehicles in the state, but there could be up to three. So it is limited legislation, and right now it only pertains to that one vehicle that's currently licensed. But we think that as they gain popularity and these kits are made available, that we may see other people converting their motorcycles so it becomes more of a year-round useful vehicle instead of just a fair-weather vehicle. With that, I would stand by for questions, and I think there's a couple other proponents. So, thank you, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee.
Thank you so much. Why don't we address the amendment while before we hear any other proponents? I noticed there are no. Well, let me ask a question first. There's none on the list. Are there any opponents to this bill? Okay, that way we can. Moved by Representative Hickey, seconded by Representative Feichert. Yep, discussion?
Nope,
none? None? Okay. We'll this vote is on 1174-OA only, the amendment that's been moved. All those in favor will say aye.
Aye.
All those opposed will say aye. Amendment passes. Now we can address the bill as amended. Any further proponents?
Good morning, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. My name is Doug Hofer. I'm the Director of Parks and Recreation for the Department of Game, Fish, and Parks. We certainly support this legislation with the amendment that's been proposed by the South Dakota Snowmobile Association. I think the key to that amendment is that it is eliminating, at this point in time, the all-terrain vehicles from the conversion and licensing them. And as Mr. Sutton stated, there's a lot of questions in terms of the damage that some of these conversions on things other than motorcycles, all-terrain vehicles may do to the trails. The width is a big issue. The bill in its original form and certainly after it's amended has a very important component in it that I think is really important to stress here and why we're here today in support of the bill, and that is that it does put a 48-inch restriction on the definition of a snowmobile. That 48-inch restriction was recently adopted by both North Dakota and Montana in their definition of a snowmobile. There are a number of other states in the snow belts that have done the same thing. As you know, especially in the all-terrain vehicle OHV world, there are different types of machines that are being designed and invented almost daily. And the width is a real issue on snowmobile trails. Our groomers are 8 feet wide. The trails through the hills in particular and really anywhere in the state where we do grooming are generally just 8 feet wide. Well, if you have two vehicles that are over 48 inches wide meeting on those trails and we've got pine trees on either side of the trail, it causes problems, obviously, especially when the speeds that these vehicles oftentimes are operating at. So the width restriction is important, and with that, we would lend our support to the bill, and I'll stand by for any questions.
Thank you, Mr. Hofer. Are there any other proponents?
Any other proponents? I'm pretty sure we don't have, but are there any opponents to House Bill 1174 as amended? Any opponents? Okay, going once, twice, sold, no opponents. Now we will move into committee questions. Representative Kaiser.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. My question is for Mr. Sutton. On the 48-inch restriction, I'm assuming most regular ATVs or four-wheelers would fit there, and what we're trying to exclude would be the UTVs or the side-by-side four-wheelers. Am I correct with that guess?
Mr. Chairman, that is accurate. The width right now of most stock and factory four-wheelers is probably right at 48, but then when you add the conversion track kit to it, that widens it. So that's what we're trying to address across the country, the overall width once you add that conversion kit, because the tracks are wider than the wheels. So that's why we're trying to keep them off the trails until we can establish some type of standard for the converted regular four-wheeler, and then the UTVs are considerably wider, the side-by-sides, and they would pose the most danger right now.
Thank you. Any other questions? Representative Steele.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Question for Mr. Sutton again. A couple of them, two questions, if I may. One is, how wide is a normal snowmobile?
Mr. Chairman, right now they vary between 42 and right at about 47 inches. Typically, a trailer typically is about 8 feet wide if you buy an enclosed trailer, for example, or even an open trailer. So they're between 42 and 47 inches is industry standard.
Okay, but we're allowing this to be 48 inches?
There are a couple of the mountain sleds that tend to, when they get a wider ski on the front for more mountain riding, they can push right out to about 48 inches. But 48 is going to restrict the oversized all-terrain vehicles. And, again, we only groom an 8-foot trail, so by keeping it right at 4 feet, then we don't have as big of an issue with over-width on a trail.
Okay, I assume on these trails, I've never been on them, but they apparently are 8-foot plus a little bit, because you've just used up, when they're passing, you've just used up all 8 feet, and there isn't even an inch to spare to be able to keep both vehicles on a trail. So I'm assuming there is a little bit of flexibility there.
There is, and when you're grooming, particularly in the East River sections of South Dakota where you've got a lot of road ditches, the trail can be groomed at 8 feet, but you've got a lot of leeway. You can get off the trail to the extent if you're meeting a group to safely pass each other. And in the Black Hills, there are some areas where it's a little tighter, where you may only have 8 feet and a couple inches to get around some of the trees. And so we're looking at it as a safety factor for the limited 48 inches.
Okay. Thank you. We have some roads that way, too, so I guess we're okay. Thank you. No other questions.
Thank you, Representative Steele. Any other questions? I'd just like to, well, let's move to the comment section. Now, if there are no more questions, any committee discussion? Seeing none, I'd just like to offer that it is very advisable on lots of the trails in the hills to really slow down when you meet another snowmobile, because they are not only trees but rocks that make them very tight. Okay, let's move on then to committee action on House Bill 11. Representative Rasmussen.
I suggest that we do pass. I make a motion to do pass.
Thank you. And I think Representative Hickey beat you on that one, Representative Steele. Any comment? Any comment?
No.
Okay.
Representative Hickey.
I only regret that I don't get to drive one of these. So, motorcycles looks very fun.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Steele.
I like the idea. We want to bring in some more revenue. That's what we need here. Thank you.
You've certainly got that correct. Any other comment? And I might add, it's not inexpensive to groom those trails, and that's what that fee is for, so it it will certainly help. Okay, then, no other comment. We'll move on to committee action, which is motion has been made, due pass, and seconded, so the secretary will call the vote.
Representatives Feigert.
Aye.
Ring.
Aye.
Shrimp.
Aye.
Russell.
Aye.
Steele.
Aye.
Kaiser.
Aye.
Qualm.
Aye.
Rasmussen.
Aye.
Stalzer.
Aye.
Shanefish.
Aye.
Duvall.
Aye.
Hickey.
Aye.
And Fercio.
Aye.
13 yeas.
House Bill 1174 as amended, 1174-OA, is passed to the floor on a 13-0 vote. Any further committee action? We can't do consent, so. Yep. Okay. Thanks for the testimony, guys. You did a great job. Everybody came out happy. And that's basically what we hope happens on all of these bills. So we've saved the most controversial one to the very end. So we will now take testimony on House Bill 1155. Are there any proponents for House Bill 1155?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. State Representative Jim Boland, District 16, representing the furthest southeastern portion of the state, all of Union County, and essentially the southern portion of Lincoln County, including the towns of Worthing and Canton. Well, members of the committee, I do really count it a privilege to have a new life experience today. In my 4+ years in the legislature, I've never in any capacity been in front of a transportation committee, and so this is a genuine treat. I bring to you today House Bill 1155, a bill that would require a change in how the mileage rate that the state pays for individuals who use their personal vehicles for state-mandated business will be determined. I first became aware of this entire concept when I was the athletic director in the Canton school system. I was responsible for hiring officials for various athletic events, and officials were paid for their labor and mileage, the mileage being paid at the state rate. Many of these dedicated folk would ask me why the rate was so much lower than the federal rate, and I had no answer. My question to other administrators in the school system on this question received no satisfactory response. I further became aware of this problem in my capacity as the mayor of Canton. I signed many warrants for reimbursements when various city employees would travel in their own vehicles to various city or state mandated functions. The state mileage rates were always far below the federal rate. As my knowledge of this issue has grown, I am now aware that a Board of Finance exists and is responsible for adjusting this rate. Their last adjustment was in 2007. It seems to me they have been a bit tardy in their duties, as it is undeniable that the cost of driving a vehicle has increased significantly over the last 6 years. It would seem to me that during the last 6 years, some increase, perhaps even a penny per mile, would be appropriate, as the rate of inflation has increased between 13% and 14% over the last 6 years, depending on how it is calculated. I do know that this board meets periodically, but it seems to me they have ignored this matter. This bill will cost cities, counties, school districts, and the state money, but what it will accomplish is to bring about a more accurate reflection of the true cost of government. We should not run government on the back of employees, volunteers, and others who perform valuable services to the state and local governments in a wide variety of capacities. This bill gives the Board of Finance much leeway. It does tie our rate to the federal rate, but I am convinced that this bill is needed. If, as nothing else, it will prod this board to act in a responsible way. It is unthinkable that they have endorsed the status quo for the last 6 years in an economy that is dynamic and rapidly changing. I urge you to pass this bill to the floor and generate a genuine and legitimate debate on a subject of fairness and realism for citizens who drive private vehicles on government-mandated business. Thank you for your time, and I'll stand by for questions.
Thank you, Representative Bolden. Are there any further proponents? Proponents for House Bill 1155. Any further proponents? Seeing none, are there any opponents to House Bill 1155?
Good morning, Mr. Chair and members of the committee. I'm Emily Ward from the Bureau of Finance and Management, and I also have the pleasure of this being my first time before Transportation Committee, so thank you for your welcome here. I ask you to oppose this bill today because this will force the Board of Finance to increase the rate that's reimbursed for state employees using their private vehicles on state business when a state fleet vehicle is not available. Just some background information about the rates that we reimburse employees. There's currently two rates. There's a low rate, and this low rate is 20 cents a mile. And this is reimbursed to state employees when they decide to use their own vehicle to travel to a place when there's a fleet vehicle available. And when I talk about fleet vehicles, those are the vehicles that the state owns and manages and runs for the entire state. There's also a high rate, which is 37 cents a mile. And this is reimbursed to state employees when a fleet vehicle is not available. There's also certain officials and employees in state government that are always reimbursed at the high rate, that being elected officers, department secretaries, and the chairs of state boards and commissions. We feel that this bill supersedes the authority the legislature has already given the Board of Finance. The board, which is made up of the governor, the secretary of state, the attorney general, the state auditor, the state treasurer, the commissioner of school and public lands, the commissioner of the Bureau of Administration, and the commissioner of Bureau of Finance and Management, is currently responsible for setting all the reimbursement rates for state employees. This bill will force the board to increase the high rate of reimbursement to within 20% of the federal rate. And currently, the federal rate is 56.5 cents a mile. This increase will cost the state an additional $467,000 in total funds, approximately $200,000 of that being general funds on an ongoing basis. This fiscal impact that I just gave you assumes that the employees that are being reimbursed at this high rate are going to keep traveling the same number of miles. This bill may actually encourage some employees to decide to use their own vehicles more often so that they can get reimbursed at that 56.5 cent per mile rate more often. The other thing is this bill really only benefits a small portion of employees in the state workforce. This isn't necessarily impacting all of state government employees. Currently, 68% of the funds that are spent on this reimbursement are used by four agencies, those being the Unified Judicial System's the largest user, the legislature is the second largest user, then the Board of Regents and the Department of Agriculture. Also, the state does not set reimbursement rates for local government entities. If local organizations like schools or counties or cities want to set their reimbursement rates to the state, that's their own decision to make. The Board of Finance is not setting that reimbursement rate for them. So with that, I'd just like to ask for you to oppose this bill, and I'll stand by for any questions.
Thank you, Ms. Ward. Are there any other opponents?
to House Bill 1155. Any other opponents? Any other opponents? Okay. There's some listed here, but they must have decided not to sit through it, huh? Oh, no, I'm reading that wrong. Some of the handwriting there is almost as bad as mine. Okay, seeing none, we'll move on to committee questions. Representative Steele.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Question would be to start with Representative Boland. Put you on the spot. This is a 20%. He said 20% either way. We're looking at 56.5 per mile. What is the minimum they would be able to pay, and what is the maximum they would be able to pay if we're talking 20% in either direction?
Mr. Chairman, before I answer Representative Steele, would it be appropriate if I have opportunity for rebuttal to the previous statement? Would that be appropriate, sir?
It would, yes, and I apologize for missing that. Thank you.
Okay. Well, I would like to just rebut some of the statements that are made. You know, technically, the statement that was made that the state does not pay mileage rates for local government, that is technically true. But I also can assure you from my experience in local government, both at the school district level and at the municipal level, is that these rates that are set by the state are generally accepted by most local governments as kind of the standard that they should use. So it is a little bit, I would say, it's a little misleading to say that it is technically accurate, but in the practical world in which local government and school districts function, this state rate does become the rate. And I'd also like to just give you an example of people who, and from my experience involved with this, you know, there's a fireman's convention. I don't know if maybe that's not the right word, but there's a training session that takes place. When I was the mayor of Canton, we have a volunteer fire department completely, and that's the way it is for most municipalities in the state of South Dakota. And volunteer firemen are required on a periodic basis to receive training so that they can continue with their to be involved in these volunteer activities. We would send our volunteer fire people would come to Pierre and be involved in the training sessions and those type of things. I don't think it was I don't think it's appropriate that here are people volunteering and individuals who will sometimes put their life on the line to receive less than an appropriate reimbursement for their travel expenses to required and mandated activities by the state and the city at that time which I was involved with. So I just use that as an example of how this rate works to the advantage of volunteers and other people who have to travel to these different activities at various places in the state. Again, many of them mandated by state boards and commissions. So that's my rebuttal to the statement. And Mr. Chairman, would it be appropriate if I asked Representative Steele to repeat the question that he asked?
It certainly would.
Yes. Thank you for that opportunity. The federal is 56.5, as I understand it, and your bill says we can go either way 20% of that figure. What would be the lowest figure we would end up with if we say 20%, or what would be the highest figure if we say 20%?
Mr. Chairman, I believe, Representative Steele, first of all, I was a history major, not a math major in college. I believe the figure would be right at approximately 45 cents for the low edge, and it would be about 67, 68 at the high end. And I'll just, you know, may I continue, Mr. Chairman? My original intention on this bill was to just say that it could be no less than 20% lower than the federal rate. I firmly believe, but I was encouraged by the drafters of the bill to put it in the form of below or above. So I went along with that. But I firmly understand that in South Dakota, the cost of driving, because we have so much open space and you don't have so much stop and go driving, is going to fundamentally be less. I firmly believe that the cost, overall cost of driving is going to be less in South Dakota than in many urban areas of the United States. So I would very much assume that the Board of Finance, if this bill would make it through all the different steps, this bill would, they would oftentimes or almost always adopt the lower figure. But I guess that answers the question.
Representative Hickey.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
I've got a thought.
For Representative Bolin, can you clarify for me the insurance cost of an accident on a work-related trip using your own car is fully on the individual car policy? Is that correct, or is there a state coverage as well that can, is there a secondary liability for the state in that situation?
I don't have the ability to answer that question. I'm sure there is an answer to that, but I am not able to answer that question.
Representative Feigert.
Sorry. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. A question for Representative Bolin. Is there any way at all to have any feel or any idea what might be spent in travel for all of the entities that we're talking about here, and what might be a percentage of increase for, because this is sort of almost hinges on a mandate. I mean, it doesn't tell those entities, those cities or counties or whatever, that they would have to do this, but we know that a lot of them would, and I'm just curious if...
Excuse me, just would you re-hit your mic button? I'm not quite sure it's on.
Yeah, it is. It's on. Maybe I'm not close enough to the mic. But anyway, is there any way of having any idea what this might cost local government?
Not that I'm aware of at the present time, but I would say that currently there's a mandate. There's a mandate, at least an informal mandate, to pay 37 cents. The mandate already exists. It just depends on, and so there's already a mandate, at least in an informal way. But as to the exact, that would be a very, my suspicion is that would be a very, very detailed and, difficult process. When you think of all the different municipalities and all the different school districts and all different counties, it would be significant. I testified to that in the statement that I read.
Thank you. Any other questions? Representative Steele.
Thank you. I'd like to give Ms. Ward an opportunity to rebuttal the rebuttal if she wants to on the question that I have for her. I believe you mentioned a figure that you tossed out there, $467,000, that it would cost. What figures is this based on? The 56.5? Did they consider the 20% in there? What would be the least amount it would cost? What would be the most amount it would cost? Do we have a figure in there? Where the did you? Unless I misunderstood, I thought you tossed out the figure $467,000.
Mr. Chair. I did. That was assuming we were matching the federal rate of 56.5%. If you looked at this rate increasing, I calculated 46 cents, not 45 cents. I think I rounded up. It would be a general fund cost of about $92,000. So it's about half of what the figure was that I had given you, about half of the $467,000.
$2,000. Okay. Thank you.
Thank you. Are there any other questions?
Mr. Chairman?
Oh. Representative Ring, sorry.
I remember to do it during questioning time. And I'm sorry I threw you off when I did that, Mr. Chairman. Representative Bolin. We've talked about what the cost might be to local government and what the cost would be to the state government. I'm interested, do you have any idea how the 36, 37 cents a mile was originally arrived at and or how the 56.5 cents a mile is arrived at? Does somebody do a study of here's what it costs to maintain the average automobile or... what I'm really trying to get at here is I think it's important that we try to reimburse, and I live almost as far from here as you do, so that we reimburse people according to what it costs them or at least reasonably what it would cost them to operate the vehicle. Well, I guess that's my question. Thank you.
As to the specifics of that question, I would not be an expert in that by any means, but I would assume it would take in gas and oil and tires and insurance and all the different factors that enter into the operation of a motor vehicle in some way. And as to the federal rate, I would not have detailed information as to how that is arrived at. Although Mr. Chairman, if I might, the one thing that strikes me as different in the federal rate than the state situation is that it is constantly being revised on a year-to-year basis. I think that's just from anecdotal knowledge. You can see how that rate is dealt with is revised, and in our gradually inflationary economy, it is revised up on a yearly basis to perhaps more accurately reflect the cost of driving.
Thank you.
Any follow-up?
No follow-up, Mr. Chair.
Any other questions? Okay, seeing none, let's move on to discussion. If there is any discussion? Okay, seeing none, then we'd move on to committee action. Representative Hickey moved do pass, seconded by Representative Ring. Any comment?
Yeah, I do have a comment. The personal cost to serve in our state in the various areas that have been talked about here is high. The compensation is often low. People are underappreciated and undercompensated. Asking people to take a personal risk with insurance and then eat additional costs, I think, is a little too much. I understand that you can write off personal expenses on your income taxes that are relating to work, and so there is that additional cushion. But I don't think it's unreasonable to have a 20% fluctuation. I would think 10% would be reasonable. None of us like to increase the cost of government, say yes to a bill that's going to cost our state additional money. We've tried to keep tight reins on that, but this is the true cost of government, and so I think this is just being honest with already acknowledged compensation that we're going to reimburse you for miles. We're just going to not under reimburse you anymore as much as we were. So I think it's a very fair bill and encourage you to pass it.
Representative Ring, do you have any comment?
Just that as I sort of said in my last comment, I think it's important that we try to reimburse people according to the actual expenses, and 80% of the federal seems reasonable. I did the sort of thing that people in my profession do here, made a bunch of rough assumptions, none of which I would try to defend. And I got us up to 43 cents a mile fairly quickly, and I'm sure there's some expenses that I didn't even think of. And so I don't think this is unreasonable. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. Representative Russell?
I'd move a substitute motion to defer this to the 41st day.
Second.
The 41st day motion by Representative Russell and seconded by Representative Kaiser. Any discussion?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I first of all want to thank Mr. Representative Boland for bringing this bill. I think that we do, in fact, need to have a conversation about, I think it's much broader than this. We have an extensive fleet in this state of vehicles that we provide and that we encourage the employees to take for various reasons. And Representative Hickey tried to touch on some of the insurance consequences of individuals taking their own vehicles. I tend to think that the rate might be a little low also. However, from my perspective, I don't like tying us to the federal code of regulations. I'd rather that we make that decision locally for a number of reasons. But also, the cost in my mind is important but secondary to what the real issue is, and that is how do we most efficiently make sure that our employees are compensated for riding in their own vehicles. But I do think that we need to have in the future a much more comprehensive discussion as to what this fleet is actually costing us and whether or not it would be more advantageous to have a higher rate of reimbursement in some circumstances. And I don't know the answer to those questions, but I do think that you're touching on the issue in a much more narrowly confined situation. But as it relates to tying us to the federal rate of reimbursement, I just can't go along with that. But I would look forward to trying to help in the future craft something that would adequately address this issue so that we could flesh out all the details as to what the policy of the state should be. Thank you.
Representative Kaiser, no comment. Okay, now, Representative Steele.
Representative Russell brings up some valid points, but I don't see where this ties us to the federal level. This gives us a 20% fluctuation in there. They can be anywhere from 45 cents to 67 cents. I think it gives a lot of flexibility for those in those positions of authority to evaluate that and set a reasonable rate, because I don't feel the present rate is fair to our employees. So I'd like to give them the opportunity to do that, and I think this does, so I would oppose going to the 41st day. Thank you.
Any other comment?
Mr. Chair.
Representative Feigert.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I couldn't agree more with Representative to the left over here. I think if there is some kind of a comprehensive study, something that we can actually look at and get our hands on and get some more input from the Bureau of Finance as to what those numbers might be. I mean, we struggle here in the legislature every day trying to figure out how we're going to fund education, how we're going to fund Medicaid, Medicare, how we're going to fund a lot of these things, and yet we just ever so slowly pick away at budgets with things that we really don't have facts on and real solid facts. And so for that reason, I think we need to send it to the 41st day and get some real hard numbers. Thank you.
Thank you. Any other comment? If not, we will vote on this amendment to move to the 41st day. Secretary will call the roll.
Representatives Feigert?
Yes.
Ring?
No.
Shrimp?
Yes.
Russell?
Aye.
Steele?
No.
Kaiser?
Aye.
Quam?
Aye.
Rasmussen?
No.
Stalzer?
Aye.
Shane Fish?
No.
Duval.
Aye.
Hickey.
No.
Versio.
Aye.
5 nays and 8 yeas. 8 yeas, 5 nays.
On a vote of 8 to 5, 1155 is relegated to the 41st day. Thank you. I got to check my listing. I got so many notes scribbled all over this that is the last bill for the day. So I would entertain a motion to adjourn.
So moved.
Second.
All those in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Same sign?
Can I get the first one out of the barrel?
I missed the second on that.
Second.
Hickey.